Seventh meeting of the House Committee on Elections, Ethics, and Rules to Order. And we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill, on House Concurrent Resolution 13.
Madam Chair, HCR 13 memorializes the life and accomplishments of former Oregon Representative Max Sumner.
Thank you, Jim. And I see that we have Representative Scott and Representative Gilliam here on this. Would you both like to come forward? Good morning and welcome to the Elections, Ethics, and Rules Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. On behalf of the House Republican Caucus, I'm here to testify in support of House Concurrent Resolution 13 to honor Representative Max Sumner. HCR 13 gives us a chance to express our condolences to Sandy and the Sumner family and to let them know how much Mac meant to his legislative colleagues and to the state of Oregon. I think HCR 13 provides a true sense of who Max was, what his accomplishments were, and what was important to him. By passing HCR 13, we hope to continue a tradition of honoring legislators who have passed. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Concurrent Resolution 13 is not exactly a tough sell. I'm looking at the entire legislative body as co-sponsors. I would just simply add that it has been my honor to serve as the appointed representative in the seat that Mac vacated. And I did not know Mac very well until I started the appointment process. And I think we all know what a great human being he was and what a good representative he was. And I would just, I suppose, add that I was struck at his memorial service not only by the speakers, his family. There was lots of humor. There was lots of passion for their dad and Sandy for her husband. The fact that the governor was there spoke volumes. But if you looked in the audience, an incredible amount of legislators from, as they say, both sides of the aisle were present, all the way to our little Malala in District 18. And then afterwards we had quite a nice little group get together to celebrate Mac's life. So I thought that spoke a great deal about the legacy of the man, and it's been my honor to try to fill his shoes, and I hope that you'll join with us in moving Resolution 13 along. Thank you.
And thank you very much, both of you, for bringing this to us. I think everyone on this committee had the honor of serving with Mac and absolutely found him a delightful colleague and somebody made an incredible contribution to this institution. So we're very glad to be able to hear it today. Are there other comments from committee members? Yes, Representative Berger.
Madam Chair, allow me to put on the record. Last session, I was the chair of the General Government Committee, and Mac was my vice chair. And you never met a fellow who was prouder of being a legislator, enjoyed being a legislator more, or did a better job of just working every single bill. Mac was absolutely a delight. You know, you get assigned your vice chairs and you don't know what you're going to get. Mac and I had a ball. I love the man, and we all miss him. Just had to put that on the record.
Great. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, if I might just make one other comment that sort of sparked a thought in my own mind. When I was appointed, the day I was appointed, two things stuck out. First, within 10 or 15 seconds of my appointment, Sandy Sumner handed me mail stacked up about this.
And said, good luck.
And then the other thing that Mac told me privately was he said, I would rather die there. But I know that's not the right thing to do. He had such an affection for you all and for this place.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on House Concurrent Resolution 13? Okay, I will close the public hearing on HCR 13, and I'll open a work session on HCR 13. And Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution 13 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Berger moves HCR 13 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Shauna, please call the roll.
Representative Berger.
Aye.
Representative
Buckley.
Aye.
Representative
Estrell.
Aye.
Representative
Plante.
Aye.
Representative Robland.
Aye.
Representative Thatcher.
Aye.
Chair Rosenbaum. Aye. Motion carries. And I think we will ask the chief sponsors to co-carry this unless one of them wishes to carry it alone. So we'll ask Representatives Gilliam and Scott to be the carriers. And I'll close the work session on HCR 13. And I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 560.
We have a guest administrator on that.
Oh, yes. Hi, Teresa. Thank you. So we're in a public hearing on Senate Bill 560, which I know you capably staffed in an earlier life.
Previous amendments, yes.
Business and Labor.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee Members. Senate Bill 560A adds 7 specified cancers to the current list of compensable occupational diseases for full-time, non-volunteer, fully compensated firefighters and requires presumption to be made by cities that provide a separate disability and retirement system. The bill came out of the Senate on a vote of 17-13, and the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee unanimously approved portions of the bill that apply to the presumption measure issue as it relates to subject workers. You do have a fiscal impact statement in your bill packet, and you also have in front of you a -A19 amendment from the Firefighters Council that establishes that the presumption applies to eligible firefighters who cease to be employed for a 120-day period from the last day they were eligible, from the last day on the job.
Okay, Teresa, thank you for that explanation. I think first we will call, let me see if we do have one witness who signed up as being farther than 100 miles, but I think first we'll call the proponents of the bill, and I'll call Kelly Bach and Bob Livingston. And then Pete Wells, you'll be on the next panel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Bach. I'm the president of the Oregon State Firefighters Council. We represent nearly 3,000 firefighters in Oregon and 44 different locals. Of course, we're here in favor of Senate Bill 560. I do know that we're pressed for time. This has been already heard in 5 different committees, so we'll keep our comments brief and just give you a general overview of what this bill does. Senate Bill 560 will provide a rebuttable presumption for 7 cancers, and it will apply to all non-volunteer full-time firefighters in Oregon, including the firefighters in Portland. To qualify for the presumption, the firefighter must have had a physical and have worked 5 years as a full-time, fully compensated firefighter. And then we also offer the amendment that this rebuttable presumption, the presumption piece, would only apply for 120 months after you cease employment, not days.
Sorry.
So it's 120 months after you cease employment. And then it will also provide a mechanism for Portland to access the workers' comp ALJ pool, which both have agreed to that, and there should be no cost associated with that, but that's also in the bill. As some of you know, this bill or the cancers covered in this bill passed unanimously out of MLAC. There was numerous testimony at the at MLAC and through that, and including the self-insured reps voted for the bill to go through, even without these stricter amendments. At MLAC, our bill was narrowed down from numerous cancers, 3 body systems, down to just 7 specific cancers, and then since then we've put in this 10-year limit on the presumption. It's also important to know that it is a rebuttable presumption. Just using the DCBS stats over the last 12 years, we have a heart-lung bill that we've had since the 1960s or so. And for the last 12 years, the firefighters have only won 23.1% of their heart cases, 38.9% of their respiratory system cases, and have won no circular system cases. And that's about only 11 cases in the last 11 or 12 years that we've won. So that clearly shows to me that with this presumption, the cancers will be put on the same presumption as a heart-lung bill, that it is rebuttable when they can bring up evidence that shows that the firefighters did not catch the cancer or the heart disease due to their job. 25 states do now have the presumption. When we started this, 23 did. Colorado and Vermont have just added it. All but Maryland cover many more cancers than we are proposing. So we think it's a reasonable start with the seven cancers. It was vetted in NMLAC, and many other states recognize the exposures that the firefighters are getting. And just real quick, I'm not going to go into all the exposures, but we're exposed to numerous known carcinogens at fire scenes. These have been measured at fire scenes and tested. It's not just anecdotal. Also, it's important to remember how dark and black the smoke is. That's one of the main reasons we're getting exposures, through skin absorption, not just through our masks, although they have tested things like benzenes and other known carcinogens inside our masks that they've tested above the permissible limits. And excuse me. And then that doesn't even take into effect that 70,000 chemicals that are on record in the EPA that we don't even know what happens when they burn and combine, and what that does to the human body. It gets so bad in a lot of these fires, even a day or two later after we've taken a couple showers, you can still smell smoke in my skin after I've taken a shower. My wife can smell it, and all firefighters would say that's a pretty common occurrence. Then we have lengthy medical evidence, and I'm not going to go through and read the studies, but we feel that it's backed up by medical science. We have stacks, this high of medical documents. We did have the chair of the Occupational and Environmental College from George Washington University come out and speak in favor of our original bill. He's not a hired gun for the IFF, for us. He just believes this, and he understands exposures and is studying it for years, and he came out in the Senate Commerce Committee and testified actually for our original bill before it was narrowed at NMLAC. Of course, the short notice and time frame, we didn't feel it was necessary to bring him out for this. And on the cost issue, the National Council of Compensation Insurance, they predict, they're an independent cost agency. They don't have a position on this bill. They provided a cost estimate to DCBS. We didn't ask for it. I could probably submit to you cost estimates that are low from the firefighters, and our opponents are submitting cost estimates that are high. So I think it's fair to look at the NCCI cost estimate, because it's they don't have a position on this bill, and they are showing a 5 to 30% increase. They could show a 5 to 30% increase, and they've also looked at this bill with just the seven cancers, not the original bill. And the stuff that I've seen from the cities and the special districts was from the original bill covering many more cancers. They may have something new, but I haven't seen that. And even though that 5 to 30% may sound like a large increase, that's equivalent to $6 to $8 per month per firefighter for an average fire district using their workers' compensation costs. So then, just to conclude, this bill was unanimous through MWAC. 25 other states have it. We have numerous scientific studies that show our exposures and higher rates of cancers in the general population, and that's compared to the normal worker and even police groups. When comparing to other healthy workers, we still have higher rates of cancers than many of those groups. We think it's just a fair thing to allow the firefighters to help their families when they get these diseases. It's not a windfall to get into the workers' comp system. I don't think anybody's really arguing that. But it will provide some time off benefits and some health care benefits, and then a death benefit, because frankly, a lot of these cancers are, the members die pretty quick from that. So with that, I'll take you the questions or turn it over to Bob or Nelson.
I think we'll hear from the whole panel before we open it up for questions. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nelson Hall. I'm a partner with the law firm of Bennett, Hartman, Morris, and Kaplan in Portland. I'm trying to fit a Representative Hunt. I'm a resident of the area of Milwaukee, Oregon. I've had the privilege for many years now to represent firefighters, police officers, those who serve our communities across this state, including the Oregon Council. Indeed, representing individual officers in their disability claims, including those involving cancer. And not that you need to hear my credentials, but one reason I'm here this morning and passionately speaking in support of this bill on behalf of the firefighters is that I was served for 5 years on the State Workers' Compensation Appeals Board by appointment of then-Governor Barbara Roberts. I chaired that committee for 2 years. I've taught workers' compensation law at Northwestern School of Law at Lewis and Clark College. Again, I offer this in terms of background, ready to answer questions. I know there have been concerns raised by special districts in terms of comparing Oregon with the state of Washington. I would simply point out that the state of Washington has, from the get-go, a different standard of proof when it comes to its disease claims than does the state of Oregon. You are no doubt familiar with the fact that Oregon applies what is called the major contributing cause standard when it comes to these diseases, i.e., the firefighter injured worker has to prove that work is 51% or greater the cause of the disease. In the state of Washington, it is sufficient if you prove that work is a material, a significant and important factor, need not be the major contributing cause factor. So we start with different ground rules, Washington versus Oregon, not really comparing apples to apples or oranges to oranges. We need to understand that. And the impact then that a presumption has in this state versus the role of a presumption in the state of Washington. Secondly, there's been some concern raised that the city of Portland, the largest unit of firefighters in the state, would somehow be exempt from this. But first of all, the presumption by this statute would apply to the city of Portland and its firefighters. There is a separate provision having to do with medical services that was originally in this bill and was taken out in order to give the city of Portland an opportunity to vet and debate and legislate medical services for its firefighters and police officers under its separate standalone fire and police disability program. There is a resolution from the City of Portland Council, which I'm not sure if it's in this record, but it's been presented in the record before in other hearings, where the City of Portland has dedicated itself, committed itself to tackling and taking care of the lifelong medical care issue for firefighters and police officers. Indeed, the mayor appointed a committee. There appears to be, I don't speak for the City of Portland by any means, but appears to be a measure that will be heading to the November charter ballot to take care of medical services for fire and police in the City of Portland. Stand ready to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Livingston representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I don't really have too much to add other than I would emphasize that this is an old new issue. This is something that, for many of you that may or may not know, Randy Leonard, a former legislator and former firefighter from Portland, in the early 90s brought this to attention to this body. So this is something that has been around for many, many years, something that we've tried to work on and tried to address. I think it speaks for itself when 25 other states already have recognized that the science is sound on this particular issue, in that firefighters, because of the occupation that we have and the risks that we take in order to protect others, we do face some significant chemical exposures and loading doses of hazardous materials out there. Simply all I can say is I find it gut-wrenching to go to funerals of firefighters that are dying before their time of cancers that, in many instances, when you talk to their oncologist, simply say, boy, we don't see these types of cancers until seventh, eighth generation of a person's life, and yet this person's 33rd or fourth generation. And so I think the science is sound out there. It's been one of the most widely studied occupations out there. Clearly, you can point to one specific study from an epidemiological standpoint and find holes in that. Many times, because it is an epidemiological study, many times if there's not enough of the population, you will have errors in that. But simply, that doesn't mean just because there's one study out there that shows that there's not a significant increase doesn't mean that there's not some associations with firefighting. And I think we have put on the record, and that's clearly what MLAC recognized. And I would simply just close with two thoughts. One, MLAC has been well established. It's something that this body has looked to for many, many sessions now to do the vetting of, quite frankly, a very difficult and challenging issue to get around, and that's this whole issue of workers' compensation and how it works. And I think it says a lot, and if you were to go back and look at the record of bills that come out of MLAC unanimously, they simply fly through this process, whether, you know, people can make the argument that, that's a labor bill or that's a management bill, and I would simply argue that these are policy decisions that are being made, and we think that there is worthiness to this bill and something that we think has been fully vetted. It's something that's been around, and it's time. We're, to be honest, like I said before, I get frustrated from the standpoint that I've been to many funerals of firefighters that have had cancer, and all we're asking for is something that we think is rightfully, in, from a fairness issue, something that, that we deserve. And with that, Madam Chair, I'm not sure if it's on the record, but I do have a copy of the resolution from Portland that I'll make sure that the administrator gets, and I'm happy to make other copies of that. And with that, we would urge this committee to adopt the amendments and move this bill forward, and be happy to take any questions.
Okay, questions for this panel? Yes, Vice Chair Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, part of the information we received in opposition to this bill talks about a tobacco user who's a firefighter, and you know how unfair that would be. Someone uses tobacco all their life and then comes and basically says it's a work claim. Could you respond to that for me?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Buckley. Yes. Again, please understand we start from the starting point, if you will, that Oregon requires the burden of proof as major contributing cause. Almost then, by definition, you are comparing, indeed, by definition, the courts have instructed us, you are comparing work causes to all other causes. And that includes a person's living habits, be it smoking or body habitus or whatever, genetics, anything that goes in there. And that's the case, whether it's a cancer claim or a hearing loss claim or a worn-out back claim, you have to prove major cause work compared to all other causes combined. So I submit to you, Representative Buckley, that smoking is already considered in the very definition of having to prove the major contributing cause. Secondly, I do emphasize this is a rebuttal presumption. And if indeed there is evidence that in that given cancer, that given individual's case, that smoking is the greater cause, then smoking will defeat that claim.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Buckley, I would also add that I think there's also assumptions that all cancers are associated with smoking. The fact of the matter is, if you go to the Own Cancers Institute site, that's simply not the case. I think it is clearly, there is clearly an association, particularly between lung cancer and those type of things, the association with smoking. Although I think, once again, we have a presumption, but yet it's a rebuttable presumption, and I think that's one of the reasons that, you know, we're not as successful in those. And so to simply throw out firefighters that may have had a history of tobacco use to these claims for cancer when there's not the correlation coupled with the major contributing cause and the risk factors that they can put on the record as Mr. Hall suggested, we don't think it's necessary, and it's also unfair.
Vice Chair Berger.
Yeah, gentlemen, as you well know, this is my second time through with this particular bill in the previous committee. And in your fact sheet, you have included the, I think you call it a meta-analysis, the scientific, is that what you call it?
That,
are you going to have, I guess my question is, are you going to have testimony on this today?
No, we are not going to, Madam Chair, Representative Berger, we are not going to provide expert testimony just because it's been heard so many times, time constraints on each medical study.
So you're the one I need to ask about this.
Okay.
Okay. I guess that's the first question that I'm asking. Yeah. Do you know what a retrospective cohort is?
Well, from my understanding, I don't have that study right in front of me, but they go back and look at all the other studies that have been done on in a subject, or nearly all of them, and then they use a pretty complicated formula. I'm sure epidemiologists and statisticians fully understand it, and then they from that they extrapolate the probability of getting that disease.
So it's not a study then, it's a review of other studies, a retrospective, and how about a prospective cohort, the same thing? It's not a study, it's a review of other studies.
That meta-analysis by Lynn Masters is a review of other studies.
No, but in your meta-analysis, you have study type.
Okay.
And that's what I'm asking. What is a retrospective cohort and a prospective cohort in terms of a study type? And some of them are blank, and I'm just trying to get an idea of the science here.
Well, retrospective was exactly what I just said, going back and looking at other studies. And I'm not sure what a prospective cohort is.
Okay. Let's go to page 2 of this, and study number 11, which is retrospective, but it's not a cohort. Okay. This is a 1994 Seattle-Tacoma study that I haven't had a copy of.
Okay, good.
Okay. And if you'll indulge me, I'd like to read from the precis, the central part of the study. This was a study, and a quite elaborate one, of firefighters and 2,447 firefighters as compared to 1,878 policemen in Seattle, Tacoma, conducted over 16 years. It was published in Cancer Causes and Control magazine. From their own study, it says, the risk of cancer among firefighters was found to be similar in both police and the general male population for most common sites. The conclusion of the authors was, while this study did not find any strong evidence for excess risk of cancer, the presence of carcinogens in the firefighting environment warrants periodic reevaluation of cancer incidents in this population and the continued use of protective equipment. So, while you included as in your study as evidence of cancer, the study itself doesn't back you up, which, gentlemen, makes me kind of wonder about all the rest of these.
Well, I'll answer that one. Madam Chair, Vice Chair Berger, are we specifically talking about the Paris study?
No, we are specifically talking about number 11, the Seattle-Tacoma 1994 study.
Okay, I wanted to just... I think, once again, if you look in the packet of information, you will find some in it. I believe if you look at this document here, mm-hmm. entitled Testimony of Patrick Morrison, and IFF, and it's in the record. It may not be in your record. This was something that we put on the record over in the Senate. If you turn to page 7 and review the epidemiological studies, you will find that clearly not all the studies will find absolutely slam-dunk information with respect to this. But I think if you look at the totality of them, and if you address things with respect to the healthy worker effect, the fact that some of these studies don't consider retired firefighters that have already been retired and that have contracted cancer, that you will find that, in general, the science is sound, and that does show that there is a higher incident and rate and increase of cancer amongst firefighters. And so while I can't answer your question specific, I know that Dr. Gadotti did address that and went into plenty of testimony, and you'd be happy to read his testimony and listen to it from the Senate side. And he addresses specifically the difference between epidemiological studies and why you will find some variances with specificity to certain studies. And like we've mentioned before, clearly you can pinpoint and you can take a small version of something and say, well, there's no correlation. But if you were to look at the totality of it, is fact of the matter is that we believe there is sound science behind it. Dr. Gadotti believes there's sound science behind it. 25 other states clearly believe that there's sound science behind this. And so while I apologize for not being able to be an expert on epidemiology, I think if you look at the materials that we reviewed, I think it would ameliorate some of your concerns.
Madam Chair, one more comment. Thank you for your answer to this. I don't have the time to go through every one of these studies, you know, and nor do I probably have the expertise. But remember what this bill says. It says a presumption. I think under our current system, we can, you know, if you can prove, it's the opposite. You have to show that it was the job that caused the disability. We are talking about reversing that and presuming that the cancer was caused by the job. That is an enormous change, and I'm just not convinced that the science is all that pure that we can make that kind of presumption at this point. Enough said. Thank you.
And that's a great segue into a question that I wanted to ask you, because I think when we talk about a presumption, it's not always clear. Does that mean that people will automatically be granted benefits if they apply for these conditions? Or, you know, maybe we could look at the presumption that we already have, which I think is for heart disease and certain kinds of lung conditions. And could one of you tell us how many of the cases where people have applied with the existing presumptions have they actually gained benefits?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, let me answer that in a couple pieces, if you will. One, I would turn to my colleague sitting here in terms of the statistics behind the last 40 years of the heart and lung, but I think that it is important to note that there has been in Oregon a presumption for heart and lung diseases, and by the way, that includes cancers of the lung. So there is already a presumption on the books. And if any cancer is going to be concerned with the impact of smoking and the synergistic effect of these, you would think it would be heart and lung. So, again, we have a track record of some 40 years with the clear and convincing evidence standard and so on for heart and lung. Real quick, if I might, Madam Chair, Representative Berger, in terms of the presumption, and as you put it, this leap, allow me to quickly tell you that the presumption is just that. It is a legislative policy. It's a decision that says we're not going to make this firefighter, this officer, reinvent the wheel, reprove this each and every time, which is what we currently do. And yes, while we can debate how many angels dance on the head of a pin in terms of where the science is on presumptions, what we do know is that in reality, where the rubber meets the road, the firefighter currently has to carry this burden of finding not only the hundreds or thousands of fire runs that he or she may have been on and document the carcinogens in those runs and then get a hazmat expert to come in and identify those hazardous toxins, those carcinogens, and then connect that with the MD, you have your case. And here's what I'm trying to get to very quickly. I call it, and it's nothing new, I call it working the case back. You say to the doctor, is there a presumption between this cancer, given cancer, and firefighters as a whole? And they will pull out any numerous studies and say, no, there's not a statistically significant, a scientifically significant connection. And what they're looking for is a standard up here, peer-reviewed 100 times, everybody is certain about it. The law, current law, requires a preponderance of evidence to prove the case. It's a much different standard. So what you do is say, doctor, is there this connection between firefighters as a class and a given cancer? Can't say that, they say. Doctor, let's break it down. Benzene and this cancer. Yes, no question there's a connection between that carcinogen and that cancer. Doctor, if I tell you that benzene is every shift for years and years, would you say there's a connection between the benzene and the cancer? Yes, if I tell you that is a firefighter doctor that's been so exposed to that benzene, would you now say there's a connection between the benzene and the cancer for the firefighter? Yes. Thank you, doctor. We should not have to, I respectfully submit, Representative Berger, have to reinvent that wheel each and every time. And that's why the presumption is necessary, and I think the science is there to support it. Thank you.
And I actually found the answer to my own question in your testimony, so you don't probably need to respond further, but it does say in your testimony that for heart and lung cases under the presumption that exists in the law right now, which is expanded to cancer under this bill, that the 23.1% of heart cases have been granted benefits and 38.9% of respiratory cases. So apparently it's less than 1 in 4 for heart cases and somewhere around 40% for the lung cases. Are there other questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Thapp.
Yes, thank you. On the front page of this, the very bottom paragraph, it talks about the NCS, or the National Council on Compensation Insurance, recently reported this legislation may result in a 5% to 30% increase in workers' comp costs. I'm wondering if there are actual numbers for the states that have adopted this policy, like a before and after, how much it did actually increase workers' comp rates. Is there an actual comparison?
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, like I said earlier in my testimony is we do have some statistics from the IFF that show what happened in other states, five or six other states, and I can surely get those and provide you those. And they show little or, you know, about 10 or 15% cost increase. So we don't have firm numbers from any other states that show here's when the presumption passed and here's what the actual costs went up to.
Follow up. I guess what would be maybe most beneficial would be states with similar thresholds of, you know, whatever you call it, legalese, where you, I don't know how you put it, but where Washington has a different standard of proof versus Oregon. Do other states have similar standards of proof that Oregon has, where you could, where you've actually shown workers' compensation correlation?
What I would just do is, in the packet that you have, you do have the NCCI, the whole document, that their cost estimate. It's about in the middle of the packet. I didn't number them. Sorry. And it does talk about the cost increase. I'm not exactly sure how they come to that. I'm assuming they look at some other states. They're the largest rate setter group in the nation. They've been doing it since 1922. They're kind of the gold standard in setting workers' compensation rates and really experienced at it, been doing it a long time. They're not a liberal group. You know, they're out there to protect their clients, and they show a 5 to 30% increase in the workers' comp rates.
Thank you.
Just for the firefighter class code, I might add, a negligible increase for the overall system.
Madam Chair, Representative Thatcher, if I might, very quickly, your question is well taken. Oregon is, while not unique, and I haven't done a head count recently, it's a very, very small minority of states that have, I mean, I'm talking a few fingers here, that have major contributing cause as their higher standard of proof like Oregon does. So it'd be hard to compare true apples to apples.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. We do have, by my count, 7 more people signed up to testify. They are all opponents of the bill. I'm going to call them in panels of 3, and because of the time constraints that we're under, we're going to ask you to limit your testimony to 3 minutes, because that's approximately the time that we allowed for the proponents of the bill. I'm going to call the person who said they were from more than 100 miles first. That's Pete Wells and Scott Winkle and Cindy Robert, and then on deck we'll have 3 people from the special district, Cecina Squires, George Goodman, and Frank Stratton. And let me just be clear, you don't all need to testify. And if somebody else has already made your point, it would be great if you could just reaffirm your support for that.
Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee, I'm Pete Wells. I'm city attorney for the city of Pendleton, Oregon. I speak from my 20 years' experience in municipal law and also my interest in and as a survivor of prostate cancer that I was diagnosed when I was age 60, and I think my comments can be less than 3 minutes unless you have extensive questions. I have submitted the written material. The highlights are that, one is this bill transfers the cost of medical care for people with these kinds of cancers into the workers' comp system. And the workers' comp system, in our experience, is the least efficient form of health care delivery. And, in fact, the most efficient system is the Medicare system because of the major system number of people who participate, and I'll get to that in a minute. The other is in the printed report is in the LeMaster study, an abstract of which is attached to my written testimony. For instance, in prostate cancer, it shows a higher incidence for firefighters of 28% is the summary risk estimate. And that would mean that for 100 people who would get prostate cancer anyway, an additional 28 would be in the firefighter group. And we submit that by making this presumption, you're in effect forcing into the workers' comp system 128 people, where 100 would have been covered by, well, all of them would have been covered by the regular health care system anyway, and whether it be Medicare or private health insurance. As for the Medicare side of this, there, both the University of Pennsylvania summary and the American Cancer Society say that 65 to 70% of prostate cancers are diagnosed at or age after age 65 when somebody is eligible for Medicare. And to the extent that the workers' comp system would be primary to Medicare, if in fact it is pursued for somebody over 65, that will mean transferring the cost of these cares from the Medicare system to the local property taxpayer in the case of city and special district costs. The patient would have an alternative source of coverage, and that would take precedence over Medicare. Our workers' comp carrier has indicated that our cost of health insurance would increase by about $104,000. We would have a hard time telling our people that a third of that cost is a subsidy to Medicare and should be paid for by our property taxpayer. Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Scott Winkles representing the League of Oregon Cities, and I'm appearing in opposition to Senate Bill 560. While the League feels that this legislation is certainly noble in spirit, it falls far short of meeting the goal of providing adequate care for Oregon's firefighters and is loaded with unintended consequences. Our first point of criticism would be with the presumption. We feel that this presumption is rebuttable in name only. By requiring a legal standard of clear and convincing as the hurdle, the city would have to prove a negative fact by a clear and convincing legal standard. With the science as unsettled as it is, we feel that as a burden that simply cannot be met, and in practice will not be met. Secondly, our second criticism would be that the science used to justify this legislation is inconclusive and lacking in Oregon-specific data. The LeMasters et al. Study cited by the proponents to justify this legislation only classifies three cancers as probably caused by firefighting. Those three cancers are multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and prostate cancer. While increased rates for firefighters may hold true for other parts of the country, they may not hold true for Oregon. A study conducted by Dr. Paul Demers of the University of Washington School of Medicine, the University of British Columbia, and the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center of Seattle, Washington, indicated that firefighters in two northwest cities did not have an overall cancer risk higher than the general population. The article was published in the 1994 issue of Cancer Causes and Controls, which is a peer-reviewed medical journal. I believe it's the same study cited by Representative Berger. The study compared 2,447 firefighters employed by the cities of Seattle and Tacoma, Washington, with male police officers of the same jurisdictions and males in 13 northern Washington counties. Demers et al. Found that the risk of cancers among firefighters were similar to the risk of the general population. Specifically, researchers found fewer than expected cases of both non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma. Demers also found that firefighters did suffer prostate cancer at higher rates than the general population, compared to police officers, no increased risk was evident. With the contradictory and unsettled nature of the science used to justify this legislation, Oregon cities cannot willingly accept significantly increased costs in workers' compensation premiums. Oregon cities employ approximately 1,940 full-time paid firefighters, and the cancers in this bill occur in 0.24% of the population. City fire departments can expect 4.64 claims per year and pay out approximately $1.1 million per claim. This analysis was conducted by City County Insurance Services, and they will be testifying as to how they reached those numbers subsequently. Based on current insurance premiums, it is reasonable to expect that workers' compensation insurance premiums will increase by an average of 234%. This will mean that the city of Albany can expect to see an increase in premiums of $146,000, Corvallis can expect $141,000, and Medford $166,000. The League believes that this increased cost constitutes an unfunded mandate as described in Article 11, Section 15 of the Oregon Constitution. I have submitted a letter for the record from the League of Oregon City's Legal Advocacy Committee that opines the passage of this legislation would in fact create that unfunded mandate. The letter references a 1999 Attorney General opinion in regards to a piece of PERS legislation. With that, I'll close and I'm eager for your questions.
Okay, Cindy, please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I'm proud to represent the city of Medford. I find myself in an interesting situation here. As Bob Livingstone said, this is a new old issue, and I think he just dated me, because in the 18 years I've been lobbying here, this issue is something I've dealt with. But from the other side, I used to work for the Washington County Professional Firefighters Association, and a short amount of time when they broke away from the state association and pursued their own legislative agenda. So I understand both sides of this issue, and frankly, I have a very hard time going against anything that firefighters or anyone in public safety is pursuing in this body, because they are noble ends and they are heroes. However, I will say it now, and I would have said it then when I represented them, that 560 is bad policy because it is not evidence-based and it is not equitably applied. 3 points, Madam Chair, and I'll be very brief. First of all, as you've already heard, the diseases and the care that we can surely show is somehow tied to the occupation. Cardiopulmonary, hypertension, and lung and heart diseases are already covered in workers' comp legislation. What this does is change those diseases. It adds to that patchwork of things that can be covered. But the fact is that the statistics have not changed since all these years ago when we started adding this to workers' compensation care. The statistics are the same, and they show that for other cancers, especially the ones in Senate Bill 560, there is no more likelihood of a firefighter, as the vice chair pointed out, or any other occupation of getting that disease. So we need to make sure that we are using facts. The same facts prevail, and probably the same end should prevail. We fought very hard for the care that is currently covered in workers' comp, and I do not think the facts have changed as to why we should change that. Secondly, why should my firefighters in Medford be treated differently than the firefighters in Portland? You heard from proponents of this bill that they are all treated the same. Portland is not left out. True, Portland is included in this legislation. However, the caps on the amount of time, the lifetime care, is different. It's different. Don't be fooled into thinking that it's not. In the city of Medford, Representative Escobar, we will have to pay for cancer coverage for the whole lifetime of the firefighter. In Portland, it's capped via their insurance already. Third, I think that you've seen quite a few workers' comp bills. In 2007, there were 54. In 2005, there were 51. I think that there's probably some changes that need to be made to workers' compensation. We haven't gone and looked at it in a holistic fashion since Senator Durfler did many, many years ago. But I think if there's this many problems with it, perhaps it's time to sit down and update it. Use best practices, use the states around us, which you've seen lots of statistics for, but make sure that our public safety officers are getting the same coverage that other states are using successfully. Balance that with the cost, and that's easy to do, and it's something that we would encourage the state to do. Finally, Madam Chair.
And Cindy, your 3 minutes are up, so if you could just wrap up.
I will. Thank you. Finally, I think that all of us agree that anything we can do for public safety is important. But right now, the most important thing we can do is make sure we have more public safety officers in the form of firefighters and policemen. And we can only do that if we use the money that we're receiving from your efforts to hire new people, not if we're having to use that money to pay higher workers' comp coverage claims.
Questions for these witnesses? Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two questions, if I may. First, to Mr. Wells. Mr. Wells, the amendment that's been offered to limit the time period to 10 years, does that change your opinion at all of the bill itself? In your written testimony, you talk about the where you see as an unfairness if you had served as a firefighter 20 years ago.
Well, as to, of course, as to 20 years ago, the example changes. And also, it would change the significance of the Medicare transfer, to which I referred my oral testimony, a little bit. But I still believe that, as in my case, when I was diagnosed while still working with prostate cancer at 60, if I had been a firefighter before, the I think in particularly prostate cancer, and half of the incidences of cancer of those listed in the bill, half of those are prostate cancers, according to American Cancer Society statistics. And that one would, the causes are so nebulous and undefined that it's hard to identify how many would be appropriate for coverage. So the testimony changes slightly, but not, I don't withdraw it.
Thank you for that response. And for the audience's benefit, we are under a call of the House, so the members will have to go vote on a bill. It is our intention to come back and take the rest of the testimony, so please just stay put. And committee is in recess. And we are still in a public hearing on Senate Bill 560. And Mr. Wells, were you in the middle of responding to a question? Or?
I think I responded to one of two questions from Representative Esquivel, I think. So I was done with a question to which I was responding. So it's up to you.
Well, I think we do have a lot of other witnesses signed up to testify. We want to make sure we hear from them, so I think we'll call another panel. Thank you very much for your testimony. And next I'll call Hasina Squires, George Goodman, and Frank Stratton. And I note that you all three are signed up, but looks like to testify on behalf of Special District, so we'll let you have the 9 minutes that the three of you would separately have. If you want to have one person using more of it, that's fine. And if you want to use less than that amount and leave more time for questions, that would be great, too.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Hasina Squires on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I'll also be testifying on behalf of a couple of other associations, but I won't ask for six more minutes. I appreciate your indulgence in allowing us just to divide up the 9 minutes. My testimony should have been distributed to you in this binder. I am, in fact, representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon, which is 900 special service districts. Approximately 275 of those districts are rural fire protection districts, so those are the bulk of our membership includes fire districts. I'm also here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire District Directors Association, which is an organization that represents elected officials of the rural fire protection districts. Their organization includes about 162 rural fire protection districts, which results in about 800 elected rural fire protection district board members. I apologize on behalf of Ken Armstrong, who represents the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. He had an emergency with his daughter being ill, and he could not be here today, so he asked to represent my testimony under the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association also. With me today are Frank Stratton, who is the Special District's Insurance Services Manager, and to my right is George Goodman, an attorney with Cummins Goodman, who will be representing the association. Our association operates a self-insured pool. We write workers' comp coverage for 165 special districts. They're the largest portion of our comp coverage. And I want to be clear that we do not make money off the Fire District Workers' Compensation Program. Tab 1, page 3 of my testimony provides a 5-year breakdown of exactly how much premium we collect and exactly how many the claim costs that we've had in a 5-year period. And as you can see, after you net it all out, there's about an $88,000 surplus there. So this is not a money-making program for us within our insurance program. I'd like to be clear that this bill does add 7 cancers to the statute, occupationally presumed statute. Brain, colon, stomach, testicular, prostate, multiple myeloma, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Those are the 7 cancers. I haven't really heard them articulated clearly today, so I want to make sure that the committee understands that that's what we're talking about. Who this bill would apply to, there are 7,666 firefighters in the state. 41% of those are paid, and 59% are volunteer, and this bill does not apply to the volunteer firefighters. And I think that's a policy consideration for the legislature to take a look at. Some of those volunteer firefighters are going into buildings and have the same exposures as paid firefighters, yet this bill excludes those volunteers. Also, I'd just like to point out that not all career firefighters spend a majority of their time responding to fires. Our largest fire district, which Mr. Bach happens to work for, has indicated that they respond to 32,000 alarms a year. And of those, 76% of those calls are emergency medical service calls. So the bulk of the time is spent responding to emergency service calls. In my testimony on tab 1, page 5, is testimony that is from an epidemiologist, Dr. Noel Weiss, who's a medical doctor from UW. He has an MD from Stanford, a PhD in epidemiology and biostatistics from Harvard, and is a faculty member at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center since 1973. And he's co-authored about 500 medical articles, and two-thirds of those have been in the area of cancer. And his testimony can be found on page 5. One of the key components answered in his testimony, and I'll be honest with the committee, I asked him to prepare his testimony after reading Senate Bill 560, and I told him, I will not bold, I will not rearrange your testimony, I will not use my lobbyist tactics on it. You write it as you want it printed, and that's how it will go in. And so his testimony is an accurate representation of how he wrote it without any editing or reformatting. We asked him, you know, is there a causal relation between firefighting and the occurrence of certain forms of cancers? And after reviewing the most recent publication, the Lemaster study, which is a meta-analysis, it is not a study, it is an analysis of 32 different studies that have been conducted. His conclusion was, and their conclusion was, that firefighting was more than unlikely or possible as an increased risk of three cancers, prostate, multiple myeloma, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, thereby ruling out the other types of cancers listed in Senate Bill 560 as unlikely or possible. With respect to prostate, tab 1, page 8, we believe that tab 1, page 8 of my testimony indicates that in four of those studies, there was an increased risk in firefighters with the shortest duration of employment. That's the opposite of what you would expect to see in a causal relationship. If there were the shorter amount of time you worked as a firefighter, the higher incidence you had of prostate cancer, that's just counterintuitive, and there must be something going on with those studies and the data. With respect to multiple myeloma, tab 1, page 9, we believe that the Lemasters failed to consider a number of studies, actually 8, that could have impacted the conclusion. And then in non-Hodgkin's, page tab 1, page 10, we believe that Lemasters took into consideration one study that was positive for mortality, but not the one that was negative based upon incidence. Then also we do have Oregon data, tab 11 of my testimony. As Mr. Livingston indicated, former Representative Randy Leonard had pushed this issue. I actually have been around not as long as Cindy, but pretty close. And in 1997, I didn't mean that in a negative manner toward Ms. Roberts at all. It's just you've got two sessions on me. We did, the 1997 legislature did ask our own OHSU, CROET, to take a look at what the incidence of if there was a causal relationship between toxic exposures encountered by firefighters. And the answer that was given, and this is in tab 11, is that there is no evidence to suggest that firefighters have a general increase in cancer rates. And then they go on to continue to talk about specific cancers and consistently answer that there's no increased risk. The fiscal impact of this legislation for our insurance program.
Actually, has 3 more minutes. Oh, she does have 3 more minutes, yes.
How did that happen?
I have been paying attention to it, so it says
it all to you.
Let me stop it. Actually,
we're actually giving each of them three minutes.
Yes, but you had asked. I'm misunderstanding. I thought the panel had all 9 minutes. I was keeping track of it. And
oh, well, so that's true. If you wanted to just use this as
that was my understanding.
That's we can keep going. So,
we're
at 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you.
3 minutes total. 3 minutes total. 6 minutes left.
Right.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. With respect to the fiscal impact, SDO projects that this bill would result in a 350% rate increase in workers' comp coverage. And I do want to cover this, and Mr. Stratton's here, and he can give an easier to understand explanation. As a non-lobbyist, actual person who projects the actual data for Special Districts Association, I do want to point out one thing. This NCCI data that is showing that there may be a 5 to 30% rate increase. We don't report. Self-insured entities do not report data to NCCI. Therefore, they do not have our experience within Oregon. 95% of the fire districts in this state are insured by self-insured pools who are not representing their data to NCCI. They don't collect it. They don't ask for it. We have nothing to do with NCCI. With that, I'll turn over my testimony to Mr. Stratton, who can speak more about the fiscal impact.
My name is Frank Stratton. I'm the Insurance Services Program Manager for Special Districts Association. And my job, part of my job, or the main part, is to do the underwriting for the program for the last 17 years and figure out how much money to collect. So as far as our analysis on how much we think we need to pay for the impacts, this bill is not based on NCCI or any other study. It's based on our own internal analysis of basically how much money do we think we need so that we don't go bankrupt. And what we've decided on in looking at our own claims history is right now we have 56 districts in our health insurance program. Of those 56 districts in the health insurance program, there's 5 paid firefighters with cancer. Of those, we think at least 2 or 3 of those would be easily fall under 560's presumption. In our workers' compensation program, I have 186 fire districts total. So I think that it's a fairly conservative and reasonable estimate that we could at least have 3 cancers a year into our workers' compensation program under the guidelines of 560. And again, I have to be conservative because these are all, it's a self-insured program. These are all the assets of the public entities. All the money in the program belongs to them. It doesn't belong to SDAO. Our analysis on a per cost per claim, along with city and county insurance services who did a separate analysis of their experience, shows that we could easily average $1 million a claim. So 3 cancer claims a year at $1 million a piece is $3 million, and that equates to a 350% rate increase because, as Ms. Squires indicated, we have one of the lowest firefighter rates in the country right now, and I think it's primarily due to the fact that it's been most of the fire districts have been self-insured since 1988, and we've driven the rates down almost every single year since. And because of that, there's very, very little margin to deal with to anticipate increased exposures. And that's why the tail liability issue is huge, even with a 10-year cap as proposed by the firefighters. It's workable, but it still doesn't address the issue of prostate cancer. The Washington bill actually says that prostate cancer is exempted from the presumption after age 50. I think that makes a lot more sense. The bill also doesn't address any pre-existing conditions. Right now, there's nothing that would limit the bill to cancers diagnosed on or before the date of the act. So, you know, we have not collected money for the last 20 years to pay for this. And literally, under the bill, the way it's written right now, you could have people filing claims as soon as this bill passed that would be retroactive. And that's a huge unfunded liability for the program. Even if the NCCI rate analysis was statistically valid, which it's not, considering that 95% of all the entities in Oregon are self-insured, firefighters are self-insured, do not report to NCCI. NCCI actually does not allow self-insured to report to them. If you took that 5%, that's about $30,000 a year. And I think you can see from just common sense that $30,000 a year more is not enough to pay for virtually anything. And that concludes my testimony.
Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you. My name is George Goodman. I'm an attorney with the Cummins Goodman Law Firm representing Special Districts Association here, and I also represent them in litigated cases involving the cancer presumption and the presumption generally under the work comp statute. I would point out, first of all, that while I will certainly make my best efforts to keep within your time constraints, I'm concerned that in the 40 or so minutes of testimony you heard from the proponents, which included answers to questions, that you received bad information, and I am going to endeavor to correct that bad information, and I will try to do it as efficiently as I can.
And actually, we only had 30 minutes of testimony from the proponents, including questions. I was timing it, so.
Okay, 30 minutes. I looked at the end time, not necessarily the start time, so that's certainly feasible that it was only 30. Thank you for that correction. I would point out, first of all, that in California, the fireman's presumption statute was passed down there, was ruled to be an unfunded mandate, and treated accordingly. I think there's significant danger of the same thing happening here in Oregon. Second of all, I would point out that there seems to be a lot of testimony being given to you about standards of proof and compensability and major contributing cause and what the courts would actually do in this case. First of all, the issue is the word unrelated. in the statute in terms of the burden of proof. That's been litigated in the state of Oregon. I'm kind of surprised that it wasn't pointed out to you earlier in some form, but the Court of Appeals has already ruled in the City of Roseburg versus Johnson case.
Mr. Goodman, I'm going to interrupt you for a minute because that has exhausted the 9 minutes for this panel. We'll give you an extra 3 minutes, and then we'll open it up for questions. So
okay.
We're starting your 3 minutes.
Thank you for that latitude. In Johnson versus City of Roseburg, a 46-year-old firefighter who had been smoking for some 30 years, 23 of which he'd been working as a firefighter, developed lung cancer. Everyone agreed that the major contributing cause of the lung cancer was the history of cigarette smoking. None of the medical experts, however, could persuasively establish that it was impossible for firefighting to have played some minimal role in the causation of the lung cancer. The judge held, and the Court of Appeals quoted this with authority, quote, from the evidence presented, I find that it is medically probable that the major contributing cause of the claimant's lung cancer was voluntarily ingested cigarette smoke. However, that is not the test in this case. The test in this case is whether SAFE has shown by clear and convincing evidence that claimant's work exposure did not contribute to the cancer. This SAFE has failed to do, therefore the claim is compensable, close quote. The word unrelated has been interpreted by the Court of Appeals to mean that the work did not contribute to the cancer. That is the only standard of compensability of this kind in the country, to my knowledge. If the seven cancers are allowed to come forward at $1 million a case, since the science is so unsettled, as you've been hearing, under this standard of compensability, every one of them will be compensable. There will be no defense. This is an irrebuttable presumption under this language. The case law is done. There's no litigation to be had on this subject. I'm surprised that you've been hearing to the contrary. In addition, to say that it is significant or matters that Washington's compensability standard is material contributing cause and Oregon's is major contributing cause is a red herring. It's smoke. Because when you reverse the burden of proof, which is exactly what the presumption does, understand that's all a presumption is ever designed to do. It's to take the burden of proof that was on one party and put that burden of proof on the other party. And in Oregon, it's clear and convincing evidence. In Washington, it's cogent and something else evidence. But that's separate from the presumption. The presumption just reverses the burden of proof. And once you do that, to say that Oregon has a major contributing cause standard adds to the problem because Oregon now, the employer has to satisfy this major cause standard, not the claimant, if what Mr. Hall said was even accurate, and I submit to you, given the unrelated language, it doesn't matter anyway, because unless you change the unrelated language, the presumption itself doesn't exist. It's irrebuttable. If indeed, as Mr. Hall said on behalf of the firefighters, they agree that smoking should be considered under a major contributing cause standard, change this statute to reflect that. And then we will actually have a fair case-by-case analysis. The last point I would raise, Madam Chair, since I think I'm approaching my 3 minutes.
You're at it.
Okay. My final point had to do with the point that you raised. You said that there had been 20 or 30%, depending on the category, of previous litigated cases where the presumption was found to apply and the case was found compensable. I would say, first of all, that those cases are relating to situations in which, indeed, you have known exposures. For heart attack cases, you have exertions on the job. For lung cases, you have smoke ingestion, well known, accepted that it happened. You have known exposures that you can deal with case by case. And in fact, those statistics show that the system is working case by case. You take your facts, you take your presumption, and then you apply them accordingly. The problem with cancer is there are no facts. Therefore, you are only applying science. There are no facts because, as Mr. Hall correctly said, it is so often impossible to find what chemical exposure might contribute because you don't know necessarily what chemicals were even there. And the science is so unsettled on what chemicals, even if you could show exposure, actually contribute to given cancers. Therefore, you are left with just increased risk. And if increased risk based on science is the standard, you must, I would suggest, to be reasonable, to be responsible, allow employers to have a defense. Otherwise, as Mr. Stratton says, we're out of business. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for these witnesses? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I can't remember if it was Mr. Stratton or Ms. Squires who mentioned on the under tab 2 where you've got the memo from Greg to Genoa. Just looking at the various columns before you even get to the three cancer claims per year, like looking at the fire district claims, are those, do those factor in the lifetime value of claims that are filed in a specific year, or is that the actual cost to your pool that you pay out in that given year from past claims?
That's the incurred cost, which represents both the paid claims and the reserves on known claims. Okay. So it doesn't include any claims that are incurred but you haven't been reported yet, which you also have to book on your financial statement. But these include just claims that we know of today and their actual case reserves and the payments that have been made on those claims.
If I could follow up, Madam Chair.
Sure, follow up.
So then transfer over to the three cancer claims per year and your projections, and I appreciate your representing them as conservative. That's what you've got to do in your job, is be on the conservative end. The dollars listed there are dollars not that would be incurred in a given year, but the whatever term you just used in terms of
It is, because in unlike health insurance, on workers' compensation insurance, you have to book your losses at what you anticipate that occurred this year. So if I have a person with prostate cancer, for instance, that's a firefighter that's held under this presumption, let's say 60 years old and retired today, if they file a cancer claim 10 years from now, 8 years from now, and they have prostate cancer, that then falls back to this policy year, to this year, where I have to book that loss. So on actual claims, incurred costs on this display here, if I was to show the actual losses as far as what I have to book on my financial statement, I wouldn't even be showing an $88,000 surplus. I would be showing more likely at least a $100,000 deficit is right now, because these are the actual incurred costs paid plus what I know. I'm actually have to book on my financial statement the unknown. And if the unknown now, in addition to regular unknowns, is going to include cancer, a huge liability, anticipated liability for cancer, I actually have to start booking that now in anticipation of those happening in the future.
I have one more follow-up.
Follow-up.
So because there is such a wide wide analysis and wide difference in terms of what the actual cost would be, I mean, the NCCI talks about 5-30%, and specifically notes that although they acknowledge that they're not dealing with the self-insureds, they specifically said in their analysis that a similar impact is expected for the self-insureds. So we've got this, you know, very low estimate to a very high 353% increase estimate. If we were to pass this bill and it were to be enacted and you were to start to have some experiential evidence for a few years, the actual cost to your districts in those early years, am I correct, would actually be fairly minimal. And at that point, if it did end up being on the low end, it would be a much more minimal cost. If it was on your much higher, what you acknowledge was a much more conservative estimate, well, at that point, the legislature could come back and say, this is not, you know, this is a 350% impact. This is not what we were told it was going to be, and make an adjustment that would get ahead of these. I mean, as opposed to what looks like on this chart of adding, you know, $15 million of cost in 5 years, the actual cost you would add on the front end would actually be much more minimal. Isn't that correct?
Well, the cost I don't think would be minimal on the front end because of two things. One is there isn't any protection in the bill that says that this can only apply to claims that have been filed with cancer diagnosed as of or after the effective date of the act. So technically you can have people that already have existing cancers, even claims that have been settled, that can be brought back up under this presumption. Then, in addition, like I said, I have to book for today in today's dollars the anticipated tail liability on this without any, because there's no cap. So if you have a firefighter who can file a prostate cancer claim when they're 70 years old and have it automatically be presumed to be because they were a firefighter at one time, that liability falls back to this year, and I have to book all those dollars now. So because of that risk, we actually made the decision to renew all the fire districts on only a six-month policy to begin with that cuts off December 31st of this year. If this bill passes in its current form without any significant amendments to protect the financial solvency of the program, we made the decision that we cannot afford to take on that unknown liability, anticipating that it could reasonably be $3 million in this year. And I'm looking just this year, $3 million, I think, is a realistic estimate of what could happen considering the tail, prior exposure, claims we know about right now. We cannot afford that. So we made the decision that we're probably going to have to, again, if this passes without any significant amendments, non-renew all the fire districts at that time or pass on a huge rate increase, which they, I think, cannot afford.
Madam Chair and Representative Hunt, may I add one thing to what Mr. Stratton just indicated in response to that question? With regard to the filing of occupational disease claims in Oregon, you have 1 year as a claimant from the date of first diagnosis or from the date a doctor tells you that the diagnosed condition is work-related, whichever happens later. Given the new standard of compensability, doctors can now tell people things are work-related that were not under the old standard of compensability work-related before, because the standard of compensability has changed with regard to cancers. And therefore, as soon as the doctors and the workers with cancer are educated to this, they can go to their doctors, as Mr. Stratton said. They could have had prostate or brain cancer for 10 years and been treated for it under their group health policy. They can now file a workers' compensation claim for those cancers, which would be found compensable. All the medical benefits paid over the last 10 years would be reimbursable to the work comp, from the work comp carrier to the group health carrier or whoever paid them. Plus, you'd have to then reserve immediately for costs going forward. Thank you.
Well, I know better than to debate the law with a lawyer, but I think that there is another point of view about this 1 year, that if somebody's been diagnosed and it's been more than 1 year, and they would have to rely on the testimony of their doctor at the time that they were diagnosed. I don't think that you can be rewriting people's medical records, because there are other reasons why doctors might say that a condition was or was not work-related. People can file for a compensable cancer claim right now and do so. We've got testimony, voluminous testimony here, that we've already had people filing for cancer claims, and some have been accepted and most have been denied. So I'm not sure you could argue that we've got a different standard for the 1 year just because this bill has passed. But the question I guess I wanted to ask, and it was for you, Hasina, is about the Dr. Weiss testimony that you were referring to. Is this the testimony that was presented to the Management Labor Advisory Committee?
Madam Chair, of the committee, it is.
And that was some of what they considered when they endorsed Senate Bill 560?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, it was. And I'd just like to, you know, respond to the assertion that this is a, you know, yes, there is an MLAC, and yes, there's management, and yes, there's labor representatives on that committee, and yes, the self-insured employer did vote to support the -2 amendments as they came out of MLAC. I would just submit to you that since 1997, I have been working against cancer presumptions, hepatitis C presumptions. I think those of you who've been here long enough know that I represent employers, and we don't support presumptions. And typically, I'm working hand-in-hand with Associated Oregon Industries, AOI, against those types of presumptions. And all I can say is that in the middle of that MLAC hearing, Lisa Trussell, who I have great respect for from Associated Oregon Industries, came and sat down next to me and said, "I really am sorry, Hasina. I apologize. This is a very, very difficult issue, and you have no idea the pressure we're under."
Representative Roblin.
Thank you. A question about the issue of unrelated to the firefighters, that showing, and you're saying that there is the case that now has defined that fact. If that is that fairly recent? I mean, we have testimony that says that only 23.1% of heart cases and only 38.9% of respiratory cases, which are already under the presumption, have actually gone the way of that employee. And yet you're saying with that standard, 100% of them are going to go that way. And so if that was a case that happened recently, I could say maybe that has skewed those. But otherwise, I don't understand that comment.
Madam Chair, Representative Rowland, that case is not recent. That case was decided in 1987. It's been cited with approval a number of times since 1987. I can tell you, however, why you have this kind of disconnect between, well, if that's the definition of unrelated, how have employers been able to defend themselves? And the answer is because under the current presumption and the conditions listed therein, as I was starting to reference earlier, you have the facts of the individual case regarding exertions or no exertions, exposures, no exposures that can lead to cardiovascular, cardiopulmonary type diseases, hypertension, lung diseases, heart diseases. The science is well settled as to what does and does not contribute to these conditions. So you can take those facts that you do know in an individual case and apply them to the science and vice versa, and doctors can come up with medical opinions based on those facts that then allows judges to decide them. In the case of cancers, the science is very unsettled as opposed to very well settled. So you have science going every which way. And you have almost no facts in every case that you can point to that in an individual case to give to the doctors. You can't say this worker was exposed to A, B, or C, and can that contribute or not contribute? It's all he may have been or he might have been exposed. And so what you're left, the doctors are left with, is this analysis of increased risk. Is the firefighter's occupation associated with more of these kinds of cancers than other occupations? And with regard to the three cancers, the Lemaster study says yes. And in those cases, that evidence of increased risk will be enough to not allow employers to establish that the work did not contribute at all, just because of the increased risk.
Hold on.
So if I were to take that to its logical conclusion, it would say that when in our old presumption we had respiratory illness, basically, fairly broad. So in that case, any lung cancers that were respiratory should have been found for the worker in all cases because it's a cancer, just like you're saying with respect to these cancers. And therefore, the evidence isn't there. And conversely, additionally, if there was a cancer of the heart or whatever, that too would have probably automatically gone that route.
No, I wouldn't go that far. Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative Roblin. I wouldn't go that far because the science in regards to some cancers has evolved significantly. And one of those cancers, interestingly enough, is lung cancer. And in lung cancer, in the last 10 years, the science has come out very strongly, including Lemaster's, saying that lung cancer does not create a situation where there's an increased risk for firefighters, interestingly enough, which is why the firefighters are now talking about skin contact, because they know there is no good science out there anymore relating lung cancer. But in 1987, that science didn't exist.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and my apologies. It had to be absent for a while, so I'm not sure whether anyone went into this. But what's going through my mind is that this packet was delivered to MLAC, was testimony for MLAC. The studies referenced, your interpretation of the studies was presented to MLAC. The information submitted by Patrick Morrison, meta-analysis of 32 firefighter studies, all delivered to MLAC. The representatives on MLAC, Lisa Trussell from the Associated Oregon Industries, Lynn Jefferson from City of Portland Risk Management, Gregory Miller from Gunderson, Ellen Cutler from Herring and David, and Sherry Sunderson of Hoffman Construction Group, they heard all of this evidence and voted unanimously in favor of doing this. And so that's what I would like you to respond to. We have an opportunity to listen to a brief amount of testimony on a bill that they went into extensively, or a proposal they went into extensively. Why should we overthrow the time spent and the effort by these representatives of industry and of labor itself, based on what you're telling us today?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, why you should is because we disagree with what MLAC did. That's the only response that I can have for you, is that we disagree with the conclusions that MLAC reached and the support that they gave to the Dash 2 amendments for MLAC.
Thank you.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much for your testimony. We have one more witness signed up to testify, and that is Lynn McNamara. Good morning. Thanks for your patience.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Lynn McNamara from City County Insurance Services. We operate a self-insured workers' compensation program for members of the League of Oregon Cities and Association of Oregon Counties. And I'd like to just run you very quickly through the fiscal impact that we prepared based on the experience of city employees and for city fire districts. Came to the same conclusion, by and large, that special districts did, but quite independently. We have concluded that Senate Bill 560 will have a significant and long-term impact on local governments providing fire services. And attachment A to my testimony, it's a chart that looks at the actual medical experience for the seven cancers in Senate Bill 560. For the members of our health program, which are city employees, some firefighters, but just a general group of city employees, and Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield prepared the analysis to say how many of these seven cancers were incurred by city employees during a five-year period, and how much did it cost on an average basis. And we used these numbers, which came from Regents, to extrapolate and say, well, okay, if this applies to an average of 6,500 employees, how many are firefighters likely to get as a subset of this? And of there are 1,941 paid city firefighters that we believe would come under this bill, comes out to 0.24%, so it would be an average of 4.6 cancers a year if indeed the statistics that apply to all city employees are extrapolated to the firefighters. Now, the proponents of the bill say that firefighters are more likely to get cancer, but for purposes of this fiscal, we're saying the average applies. So for our particular workers' compensation group, we have about a quarter of those firefighters in our program. So we conclude that we would need to fund for one cancer claim a year, and the average cost of one cancer claim a year is $1.098 million using this analysis. Now, that takes the medical and multiplies it by three, which is pretty much an industry standard that a cost of a workers' comp claim is three times the medical. In our program, it actually has been a little more, but again, to be conservative, that's the way we looked at it. We also did not include in that any additional cost of reinsurance that there might be. Our reinsurance broker has indicated that it's hard enough to cover firefighters as it is. If this bill were to pass, there may be even a greater difficulty and most likely would be a much higher cost. Now, it's easy to see how you could get to $1.1 million. Attachment B looks at a case that says, here's someone who has cancer, the average medical cost, and again, one-year cost is $366,000. Let's say that person had 26 weeks of time loss and then unfortunately passed away and the spouse was eligible for survivor's benefits at age 50. And there is an attachment of a life expectancy table to show where those numbers come from. You get to $1.1 million pretty quickly. So, again, the medical numbers bear it out, and just a simple extrapolation of the actual benefits could bear it out. And finally, we've talked a little bit here today about NCCI and those numbers. when you do the math, it just doesn't seem to match up anywhere near the actual average cost of a claim that we can project. At 5% in our program, a 5% increase in the rate would raise $39,000. At 30%, you get up to $236,000. That's more, obviously, but nowhere near $1.1 million a claim. We've heard testimony that could be $6 to $8 a firefighter. Again, looking at the total number of paid city firefighters and then the total number of paid firefighters overall, we're getting $19,000 to $25,000 overall. And again, from what any of us know about cancer just experientially, $19,000 to $25,000 isn't going to pay for very much of the benefits that this bill would provide. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for this witness? Lynn, I'll get to you in a minute. We don't have anybody from NCCI here, obviously, to talk about how they came to their figures, but I assume one of the things they looked at were the 23 and I guess now 25 other states that have a provision such as this in its law. So did you look at those other states to see, when you calculated your estimates, how it actually was playing out in reality?
Madam Chair, we did not, in part because the laws are different, the wording is different, the interpretation will be different. We really decided to go, what is the actual experience of these seven cancers among city employees? Because those are the employees who are going to be subject to this presumption in Senate Bill 560. So I'm sure that would be interesting, but it didn't seem as relevant as actual Oregon experience in looking at this.
And were you calculating that all of those cases would be covered under the new law, under this bill, or were you calculating a fraction of the actual cases?
In our case, we assume there is going to be one case, which is a fraction for our program. So one case is not unrealistic to think among all of the firefighters that are out there that one case would be accepted in this program a year.
And Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, you had my question, and you asked it better than I did. The only thing I would, and this is a kind of out of left field question, if you'll indulge it, when the heart and lung presumption was put in place in late 1960s, do we have any information about what happened to costs to cities and special districts after, you know, that took place in the late 1960s?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, I certainly do not. I'm sure somebody could develop it for you, but I do not today.
Thank you.
Any other questions for this witness? Representative Berger, since you didn't hear the testimony.
Any questions?
What are we on? On Senate Bill 560.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I guess not. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on Senate Bill 560? Okay. Seeing no one, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 560. I'll open a work session on Senate Bill 560. And
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Buckley.
I move Senate Bill 560 to the floor. Would it do pass?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I'm
sorry.
-A19.
Madam Chair, I move the -A19 amendments to Senate Bill 560.
Representative Buckley moves the -19 amendments to Senate Bill 560. Is there discussion on the amendment?
You might want to just say what the A19 amendment is.
Teresa, would you like to summarize
it? Yes. What it does is that it imposes a 10-year, let me explain the amendment so I can get the right terminology, since I said it was 120 days early on. The presumption applies to eligible firefighters who cease to be employed for a period of 10 years from the last day of their employment as an eligible firefighter.
Okay. Discussion on the amendment. Is there objection to the amendment? Okay. The amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Buckley.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 560A to the floor for the due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Buckley moves Senate Bill 560A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes, Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say I really appreciate the A19 amendments. I think having that cap on the tail really significantly increases my comfort level with the bill. And frankly, I'm one of those people who has consistently voted against things that MLAC has failed to approve that have been brought before to the legislature, often on the single digit end of 55 to 5 votes. The fact that MLAC has approved this significantly increases my comfort level with it, and I will be supportive of it.
Yes, Vice Chair Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I won't belabor the point that I don't believe the science is there. I believe this is a very poor policy for the state of Oregon. I will not support the bill.
Other comments from committee members? Well, I would just say that as a former member of the Management Labor Advisory Committee, I am convinced, because I served there as a labor member, that it is not all that easy to hoodwink the Management Labor Advisory Committee, and it is quite significant that that committee did unanimously approve this bill. And that, together for me with the fact that we now have 25 other states that have a presumption such as this in their law, does persuade me that we are going to be well within the norm of states if we do adopt this. And so I'm comfortable with it, and we'll be voting aye. And, Shauna, please call the roll.
Representative
Buckley?
Aye.
Representative
Esquell?
Nay.
Representative
Hunt?
Aye.
Representative Roland?
Aye.
Representative
Baxter?
Excused.
Representative Berger? No. Chair wasn't wrong. Aye. Motion carries. And is there yes, Representative.
Go ahead.
Berger, you're volunteering.
I would like to serve notice of possible minority report.
Okay, Representative Berger serves notice of a possible minority report. Is there a volunteer to carry this on the floor? Then the chair will carry it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, and I think that given the lateness of the hour, we are going to carry over House Bill 2060. We're also going to carry over Senate Bill 700 to our hearing on Wednesday. Nothing further to come before us, members. We are adjourned.